Good morning, Colorado. Here we go. Y'all ready for this? The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, we bring the show to you to answer your questions on any legal subject. It doesn't matter what the subject is. It can be landlord-tenant, estates, wills, divorce, real estate. We are injury attorneys. We'll answer injury questions as well. We'll answer any question, solve your problem anytime. All you have to do is call us right here in the studio right now, 303-713-8255. That's 303-713-8255. We'll be glad to answer your questions and solve your problems. We do it every week, every week from 10 to 11 on KOA 850 AM, 10 to 11, and every Saturday morning. We have the Champions of the People Injury Show. That is a dedicated injury show. We do a whole host of injury shows throughout the metro area and mountain towns and on the plains. We do them on different radio stations, and we do them right here. We do them on KOA, and that's the Champions of the People Injury Show, where we go into detail to discuss injury subjects and how insurance companies try to beat you. We've been doing this for a long time. And then once you understand what we preach all the time, that is that your injury claim is a war with the insurance company. They really, really don't want to pay. They want to reduce, mitigate, defeat, beat your injury claim. And so we cover a different subject each week on our Champions of the People Injury Show at 10 o'clock. For example, you want to know about neck injuries? Yeah, I injured my neck. You need to know about neck injuries. Listen to our shows. Back injuries, lumbar injuries, injections, transforaminal epidural steroid injections, trigger point injections, conservative modalities of treatment. How do you present your damages? What are damages, injuries, and losses? How do you fight liability of how the accident happened? When you were rear-ended? I just could go on and on and on about our Champions of the People Injury Show. It's a one-hour show every Saturday, 10 to 11 on KOA. We're glad to do it. You know, now, Brad, we've got this week an executive order issued by Governor Polis with regard to the coronavirus matter and paid sick leave. And so, you know, this is not a political show. This is a legal law talk show. So the paid sick leave provides this relief, this payment, this mandate by executive order. And so how does that work?
Well, it's kind of interesting because it's a power that the governors throughout the states have it. It's a power in varying degrees. It's a power that we have in the state of Colorado, that Governor Polis has. It's a power that the president has, and it's been used by Republican and Democratic presidents alike when they've decided they're going to, for some, usually it's based on what they perceive to be some emergency and some requirement that there be immediate action taken. Where they bypass a bill that might be introduced, and you've got to go through the legislative process to pass the bill and make it a law, and instead the executive order has the power and the effect of a law, and it has the same effect on the citizens of the state of Colorado as if it's a law. It is subject to review, both legislative review and judicial review, to determine whether it's an enforceable order. And normally, once the governor publishes the executive order, it becomes something that is enforceable until it's otherwise found to be inappropriate by a judicial process or by the legislature, and they decide they're not going to agree to it.
It's kind of fascinating because the governor or the president, governor of any state, but we're talking about the one here in Colorado right now, issues an executive order. What is an executive order? I mean, what the heck is this thing, right? And how does that coexist with statute, legislation? I mean, I thought the legislature had the right to pass statutes. The judiciary would interpret them, enforce them, right? And then the president would govern the state, or the president would govern the country. And so you got to break executive orders down. It's a pretty complicated area of the law, but the basics are, you got to figure out what kind of executive order it was or is. And the fascinating part about this area, Brad, is that there is no question that the governor or president, but we'll talk about the governor. The governor has the ability to issue an executive order to govern manage the governor's area, managing the state and employees and that sort of thing. Now, if you have an executive order like this one that affects the public, this is an executive order that says you got to give paid leave if you qualify as an employer, and there's a very low barrier. Almost every employer would qualify. So now we got an executive order saying you're going to provide, paid sick leave. But the executive order, and when you challenge it, it can be challenged in court, right?
Well, absolutely. It can be challenged in court. It can be challenged in court, or it can be challenged, or somebody from the legislature can decide that they don't agree with it and they can try and change it. You know, normally, if it's the governor's own party that's in charge of the legislature, you're not going to get the legislation. You're not going to get things overturned. But if that's our system of checks and balances, where the executive branch can issue an order, but the legislative branch has the opportunity to be a check and balance over what happens.
Well, this one here, on paid sick leave, obviously it doesn't just govern the government, it affects the public, because it defines employers, and you're going to give your employees paid sick leave under certain conditions on the coronavirus for testing and that sort of thing, and what happens if the test is negative or positive. But we're on the legal subject of executive orders. Now, let me give you an example. So the state minimum in the of law of insurance coverage by state law is $25,000, which is way too low, but that's the state minimum. So could the governor issue an executive order saying, no, the state minimum is something different? Probably not. That statute's pretty clear. So the governor can't issue an executive order to change a statute he or she doesn't like just automatically, and that's how it can be challenged.
Usually it's done with the intent to deal with the state of emergency. And right now, as we sit here today, there is a perceived state of emergency with the coronavirus. Everybody's stepping in trying to help people that might contract it and might contract the symptoms, and encourage testing and encourage people to go address the potential virus. If somebody has a concern about maybe having the symptoms of the virus, but they can't get off work to go get it tested, or they can't get off work to deal with the symptoms, then you know what Governor Polis just did by issuing this state of emergency and this executive order is he in effect gave most people working a 4-day vacation, paid vacation, or a 4-day paid leave. I can't say vacation.
Not vacation, no.
Because if you're suffering from the symptoms, you probably aren't considering it a vacation. But he gave them a 4-day leave to get themselves tested and to keep them, in essence, quarantined or away while the test results come back. Whether that's right or wrong is not something this show will address, because we're not political in this show. But that's, in essence, what it appears to be in a nutshell. Now, there's exceptions to the entire executive order. So please don't take what I just said and go, oh, I got it. I can go take a 4-day vacation. You've got to fit within certain requirements and parameters. You have to do certain things. So if you think you're just going to get 4 days paid off work, first thing you got to do is make sure you're fitting within the requirements of the executive order itself.
Well, the fascinating part is the executive order covers different subjects, and it can mandate it, and it's in effect until it's changed, until maybe it's ruled to be invalid. Or you can call us at 303-713-8255. Right now, Bob, we're going to get to you right after the break, so hang on. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock will be right back. Welcome back. Fasten your seatbelt. Here we go. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. Our law firm is Bell and Pollock. We formed our law firm in 1984 with a vision and mission of helping injured victims and their families put their lives back together again. You can put our experience to work for you. Our office number is 303-795-5900. That's 795-5900. Our studio number right here, right now, live on KHOW is 303-713-8255. Join us live is Bob from Parker. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
What can we do for you?
Well, I have a renter who rented rooms up above my garage a couple of months ago, and he just appears to have left, like abandoned his furniture and clothes, which not much that he had there. And I'm not quite sure what to do about it. I've tried calling him, left him voicemails, and just never hear back from him. I'm not quite sure what to do with it.
All right, let me ask you a couple of questions, and we'll see if we can get you an answer here. When did this start, this so-called tenancy of the room? Just approximately.
I would say at the beginning of the year.
Okay, of this year right here?
Yes.
Okay, and then when did it kind of end? When did he kind of leave?
Earlier this month.
All right, so we got March, all right. And then was there a written lease document?
No.
Just oral?
Yes.
Was there a security deposit paid by Mr. Absent Tenant?
No.
No security deposit. Did he ever pay you any rent?
Yes.
All right. So right now, what was the understanding of how long he was supposed to be there?
There was no length of time discussed. It was just a month-to-month type of a deal.
One more question, and then we'll get down to an answer. When he left in approximately March, I mean, how long has it been gone? A week, 10 days, 2 weeks? What do we got?
He's been gone about a week, maybe a little longer than a week.
And so it looks like he just abandoned his personal property, and that sort of thing.
I missed it. Go ahead.
And he was arrears in the rent.
All right.
Okay, was he on, how was the rent being paid, month to month, week to week? What was the rental? Or what is the rental situation?
It was $1,000 a month, and he paid in various stages, I would say. I was agreeable to have him do it like twice a month, and the last time that he paid was in the middle of February. He paid half the month then, and nothing since, and just up and left.
Okay. So his rent's paid through what time period?
Through the middle of February.
Okay, so he's late in his rent, okay, right?
Correct.
And you have no written lease at all?
Correct.
Okay. And you've tried to contact him for the last couple of weeks, can't get a hold of him?
Well, not for a couple of weeks, but just off and on during the last couple of weeks.
Okay.
Not every day or anything like that.
All right. Well, we have a couple different questions here. One is he on a month-to-month tenancy? And if he's on a month-to-month tenancy, when would the tenancy end? Because it sounds like you've got a situation where he needs to be where the rent is paid on a month-to-month basis. You now have no written agreement, right?
Correct.
So you could give he's late in his rent right now. You could give him a notice to quit or for the next time period that the month would start. On the month-to-month tenancy, or you could give him a notice, a three-day notice or demand for payment of rent or possession of premises. So you could do either one of those. And if his failure to pay within the time period or his it would give you the right to remove him from the premises. You could also argue that he's abandoned the property. Normally, abandonment's going to take You know, I would tell you normally abandonment's going to take you 30 days before you're going to be able to say, hey, he's abandoned the property and you're entitled to go in and just go into the house or into his room. But the do you have a key? You wouldn't have to break the door down or anything like that, would you?
I think yes, it's just a room upstairs, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a couple of rooms up above the garage.
Well, they don't have a lock on them, a separate lock?
Yeah, they do. But I have a key.
Yeah, yeah.
Even the key.
So I think what I would be doing, let's get it straight. This isn't the type of tenant where he's got a job that he could be offered 2 weeks or 30 days, or he could be get out of town or doing something. It's not that kind of tenant. Or do you know?
Well, I'm not positive. I think he just changed jobs. Maybe at the beginning of February.
Okay. See, it doesn't sound like you didn't have him fill out an application or give you any specific information about where he works and what he does.
No, he worked at Frontier when he first moved in, and he told me that he changed jobs and that his employer screwed him over, frankly, is what he said.
Okay.
Okay, well, my take on this thing, Bob, is that, you know, you got the property there. There's a couple of ways to approach it, but Brad was right on the money when you post a notice to a 3-day demand for payment of rent or possession, because that's how you legally get possession of the property. I mean, he is a tenant. He does occupy that status. But number one, if the property is abandoned, and there's a whole host of law on what abandoned means you have to have the intent. He has to have the intent. That's hard to prove sometimes. The intent to abandon the property and the physical act of abandonment. So I think it's been too short of a period of time to really declare the property to be abandoned yet. The other way is, if you've got money that's owed to you, you can create a landlord's lien. What does that mean? That's a lien for the, like, your rent or damage or whatever, but rent, and you create a lien because the property's still there, so the lien goes against the property. That doesn't just give you the automatic right to take the property, sell it, dispose of it, right? And unfortunately, that part of it requires a court action to enforce the lien. So if it's not true, if it's abandoned property, you can claim it. But there's a lot that goes into what's abandonment. If it's not abandoned property and you want to get him out of there, you give him a 3-day notice, which we can help you with. And also you have a landlord's lien to deal with the property.
Yeah. It doesn't sound like you care whether he's there or not. You like getting the rent, but it sounds like as long as he's paying the rent, you're fine. But if he doesn't pay the rent, if he's gone, he's gone. If he's there, he's there. You're okay either way. Is that correct?
Well, I guess kind of sort of like that. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to see him lose any of his property or anything like that. I'd like to help him if I can, but I don't have any way to contact him anymore. If he doesn't return my phone calls, I don't know what to do with him. So,
well, it's a tougher spot for landlords, because if you post the notice of the 3-day demand for possession or payment of rent and they don't do it and you get a judgment, and so you get the property back, the real estate back, because that's how the tenancy laws work, then is the property abandoned? Maybe not so sure yet. Is there a specific time you have to wait to declare abandonment? There's no specific time. It's just the act of abandonment plus the intent to abandon. And then so the landlord has to put the property in storage or protect the property for a time period until it's determined to be abandoned.
I think,
or you're forcing the landlord's lien.
I think quite often you can use a 30-day standard. If they don't come back for their property or do anything for their property in 30 days. But you know, you can have a person who works out of town and is gone. You can have a person who's been ill and they haven't gotten contact back to you. The situation you have here in the main situation is this person was supposed to pay you rent every month, and he hasn't paid you rent, and it's been since February, and we're now headed into into April and he hasn't paid you, you have a right to do a 3-day demand for payment of rent or possession of premises. And that's taking, like Gary said, we can help you. That's filling out a form and putting it on the door. And if he doesn't look at it within 3 days, then you have the right to go to court and do a court action saying this person has not respond to the 3-day demand for payment of rent and possession of premises. He owes me this rent. He hasn't done so. And you can ask for possession of the property, at which point you can enter the property. You preserve his property until we determine abandonment. I can help you with that as far as the time period. And we can get you moved down the road.
Hey, Bob, can you hang with us until after the break? We've got a couple more things to tell you, okay?
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
All right, we're going to catch you on the other side of the break. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Don't forget about our Champions of the People Injury Show today at 10 o'clock, 10 to 11 on KOA. Our website is championsofthepeople.com. That's championsofthepeople.com. All of our books are there. They're free. You can download an e-copy of the book. And if you want a book, call us right here at 303-713-8255, and we'll send you a hard copy of your book. Bell and Pollock. Be right back. Welcome back. Here we go. Grab your legal bagel, your legal coffee. You're listening to the Law Talk Show of Bell and Pollock, the Bell and Pollock Show, the only show of its kind. You can call us right now, 303-713-8255, 713-8255. If you want a hard copy of any of our books, just call right now, and Kevin will take down your information. We'll send you a book. You go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. You can download an e-copy free. If you want a hard copy, it's free. It doesn't get any better than free. All of our books have a lot of information that are very useful to you. If you've been injured on the job, there's a work comp book that has 17 traps in there on how you get trapped in the work comp system and how to beat them. We have one book on the Colorado Definitive Guideline to Colorado Car Insurance with sample deck pages, sample insurance policies, written in easy-to-understand language, not legalese. So we can all figure it out. That's free. We have a book called Cowards of the Street, Hit and Run. Almost every day I see a headline of Hit and Run. And these are cowards of the street. They are cowards.
Before we get into, and I know we got a caller on the line, let's make sure. You know, normally right now we'd be doing an advertisement for Caitlin's. We called Eric and he's doing some stuff around the restaurant. He couldn't quite get on the phone. Caitlin's is open. I know it's a time period where people are concerned. Caitlin's is open. It has at least 3 different sources for deliveries for to-goes. So, you know, you don't have to worry about to-goes. If you give them a call, you'll be able to get it. We're gonna try and get Eric on at the 7:45 time period, so you'll be able to talk to him then. But they do to-goes. They are open for people to come in and sit down. And they will also, if you want to do an order and drive up to the restaurant and have them bring it out to you, they'll bring your food out to you, and so you can just take it without having to be in contact with anybody. So in this time, there is a way to still get the great food at Caitlin's.
Right, exactly. All right, we were talking to Bob before the break. Bob, you still with us?
Yes, I am.
All right, so one thing we really want to impress on you, and we'll be glad to help you off the air as well, but documentation, documenting how long this tenant's been gone, documenting you know, the property, documenting through pictures, documenting the posting of the notice. It's easy to take pictures of all this stuff, and it's important to document how long this property's been there unattended and how long the tenant's been gone, because that could be necessary later when you take this action. So you can post a notice for payment of rent or eviction. You can get the order, but you know, if the judge issues the order, there's a little bit of complicated law. You got to wait 48 hours for a writ of restitution. Then you can physically kick the tenant out. Then the sheriff can come. They set up an appointment with the sheriff. I've done it many times. And then the sheriff comes, and if you can't get into the door, you said you had a key, but if you can't get in, you can have a locksmith there. I've seen it happen where the sheriff shows up at the same time as the locksmith shows up at the same time as the movers show up. everything's going to be gone within about 45 minutes out of that place or less. And so that's the way it would work. And we'd be glad to help you if you need help. But I just want to remind you of this documentation. You got to document and be able to prove. If they ever ask you, how long was the tenant gone? Well, I know exactly. It was from this date to this date. Still gone.
Okay.
You know, that sort of thing. So that was going to help you. So does that make sense to you?
Yes.
All right.
Would appreciate your help. So
normally, by the time you get through the writ of restitution and you get everything ready to go, the time you will have had another month go by to get everything worked out. By the time you do the 3-day demand, and that doesn't happen, then you go to court and you do a post to the court notice, and you go to court and you get an order and a writ of restitution from the judge, and then you get a hold of the sheriff and they execute the writ of restitution. You're going to be 3 weeks to a month down the road. And at that point, you should have heard from this tenant. And if they haven't paid rent, then you haven't heard from them since February, then it's going to be a situation where you're going to be in pretty good shape when you decide to put the property out on the street.
You know, all this talk about writ of restitution and eviction and notices, it sounds kind of complicated. We can make it easy for you. So if you don't mind, I'm going to put you on hold and give Kevin your contact information, and we'll be glad to contact you and see if we can help you.
Okay, that sounds fine.
All right.
All right.
We'll
thank you for calling our show, Bob. We appreciate it. I'm going to put you on hold, all right?
Yes.
All right, great. We appreciate all of your calls, 303-713-8255, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind, I'll guarantee you. We've been doing the show for years. We can help you, 303-713-8255, our website, championsofthepeople.com. Joining us live right now is J.D. from El Paso County. Good morning, J.D.
Good morning. I appreciate your service, gentlemen. I'm wondering what can be done about a particular statute that was passed in 2013, and it's in book number 13. It's on page 677, I believe. It's very misleading.
What's the statute say?
It's Article 65, wrongful incarceration. It states that it has an editor's note on it, on top, saying that it had been found unconstitutional by the federal government. But everything below it for nearly two pages is conflictive with what the government ruling was when they found it to be unconstitutional in 2017, April 19th. So since 2013 and 2020, which it is now, there's been a statute for wrongful incarceration in the Colorado statute books, and probably going into print now with an editor's note on it that's totally contradictive and totally unconstitutional, and the requirements of anyone being able to go through the wrongful incarceration process according to federal government standards is not going to have a fair chance at that because it's misleading.
So it's a wrongful incarceration statute that's been held to be unconstitutional, J.D.?
Yes. It was found to be unconstitutional in
2017.
Nelson versus.
Okay, and
Colorado.
Just a couple of questions. Was the whole statute struck down as unconstitutional or part of it, or what do we know?
The complete statute. It was a good effort to try and have a remedy. It was a good effort to... for individuals with this unfortunately have been wrongfully incarcerated, it was the only remedy too, as well, to be restored, which would mean that they would restore their background so they can rent and so they could vote or even have their job if they were wrongfully incarcerated. If it's found by the appeals court that they were found harmful errors when they were convicted, that's what we call wrongful incarceration. If it's not non-harmful, it still may be required to pay back fees and court fees due to them, but they aren't for the complete restoral, which means, you know, they have to seal the record, get them any mental treatment for anything like that, dental or whatever, and also pay them for the years that they had been incarcerated.
All right. Well, wow. Do you raise some interesting questions? So let's break it down a little bit, component by component, part by part. Kind of that's the way I practice law. So, you know, let's take this issue We have the wrongful incarceration statute to try to restore your rights. You say the whole thing in 2017 was struck down as unconstitutional. So if that's true, and it is true, then it goes away. Statute goes away. It's not effective. It's void if the whole statute was struck down. And then that eliminates the rights that were created under the statute. So, I mean, that's the general view from 30,000 feet as to what happens to that. Okay. And so, you know.
How do we fix the legislation part where it's in the statute book? And so when an attorney looks at the statute, or any lawyer, an attorney, or judge, or prosecutor, they're going to be totally misled. Unless they listen to the transcript of Nelson versus Colorado federal ruling 2017, April 19th, you have to put the two and two together to figure out how to restore the person, because the statute's still misleading. Everything under the statute is an X out from what the federal government has. So there's nothing, there's no real remedy in Colorado since 2013 when they tried to do it. There has never been a real remedy or a process
for wrongful incarceration.
For wrongful incarceration.
Right.
There never has been. It's still in print with an editor. And you've been in law long enough to know when you go to statute picking, it's still an editor's note on top of a statute, because there's been either reconstructed or amend, something's been amended to it.
Okay, can you hang with us over the break? Yeah. We've got to go to break, and we're going to finish our conversation with you. But I want to leave you and everybody else with this question during the break. If the statute was held to be unconstitutional and it's void, can the governor issue an executive order, which we were talking about at the top of the show, an executive order covering the same thing? How about that? How about an executive order from the governor covering the same thing the statute covered? Would that be enforceable? So think about that with your coffee. Right, Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, Bell and Pollock, and we'll talk to you on the other side.
Wait a minute, baby. Stay with me a while. Said you give me.
Good morning. Welcome back. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. Our law firm is Bell and Pollock. We are injury attorneys, but on this show, we're going to answer your question on any legal subject, and we don't care what it is. We've talked about the Constitution, searches and seizures, Second Amendment rights, 14th Amendment. We've talked about landlord-tenant, property disputes, abandoned property, divorces. You can call us right now, 303-713-8255. That's 713-8255. 5-5, and I think Erica Caitlin's is still occupied, but Caitlin's is cooking this morning and ready to go.
Yeah, you can call Caitlin's at 303-798-6600 if you want a place to go order. They are open. You're free to go down there. There's no problem. There's no reason you can't with this coronavirus. I know a lot of people are concerned about getting out. Caitlin's can keep you can go ahead and take care of you if you feel like you want to go out and have some breakfast. You can sit out on their deck if you want to weather some of the storm or some of the weather. And also, they have a number of different ways they can deliver the food to you. So you can go pick it up, you can have it delivered, or you can go in and have something to eat. And they're open and ready for business and doing just fine. So don't worry about it. Head on down there if you have any questions or if you want to talk to them about it to go order, 303-798-6600.
Exactly right. So you can call us right now at 303-713-8255. If you want any of our books, call us right now or go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. Championsofthepeople.com. We were talking to JD before the break. JD, you still with us?
Yes, sir. And I threw the question when we broke off on the phone call.
Yeah.
The governor. That solution, I'm sure you may not be amused of the fact that we have been trying to contact the governor's office via email and phone calls for nearly over a year now, and they will not even entertain the thought or say that they will look into it. They've hung up on this issue. They have hung up the phone.
Well, I'm sorry you've had that.
And people are home.
I'm sorry you've had that unfortunate.
Get their jobs.
Right, I understand. I'm sorry you had that unfortunate experience, that we don't control the governor's office. And you're obviously trying very, very hard. So kudos to you on that. But the legality of it is, my question was, can the governor, as a matter of law, can the governor issue an executive order to cover the fact that, you, as you say, this statute went away, was held to be unconstitutional. But Brad and I were trying to research during the break, and we're having a little bit of trouble finding that case and the overturning of it. And we're probably going to talk to you off the air so we can get the right site. But as a pure as a matter of pure law, when it's declared to be unconstitutional or vacated, it's gone. It's over with. But sometimes, that's why I asked you the question earlier, sometimes the courts can declare part of it to be unconstitutional and not part. That's a whole different area of law, right? But sometimes they just strike down the entire statute. And then from some people's perspective, obviously like yours, that doesn't seem fair at all because wrongful incarceration. But people still get paid in Colorado for wrongful incarceration. There are cases on the book. I mean, are the new...
They designed a bill after a man named Dewey who did over 23 years and was restored. But they only have had one other Murphy since. But since it's been struck down in 2017...
Right.
When it was designed in 2013 and drafted in 2013. So it's not void, nothing from 2013. And 2020, that statute as it is in print, you'd have to go back and get a civil case against somebody. But that statute was the civil remedy from 2013.
I understand. Yeah, we understand. And now
you need a total reconstruction.
Now you say the remedy's gone.
Well, they're other than trying to do a civil case against them. And when the civil remedy has been that, it says it clearly states that this is the civil remedy because Colorado before 2013 had no remedy.
Right.
When other, this was the only, it's one of the last states to try, and they said this is wrong. We need to have a statute for that. They drafted the statute, and then one person was restored with it. Was Dewey, but the requirements on that statute was that they'd have to take the person back to court. You'd have to refile and go to court. You'd have to send a notification to the attorney general's office, to the attorney general's office, to the DA that presided.
Right.
It would be sent back to the district court that presided.
Well,
in the case
well,
the first
well,
time
well,
when
well.
It was found to be unconstitutional, that the person was found to have an amendment. Their case was. They won their appeals with harmful error.
Okay, I'm starting to get where you're at. The Colorado Exoneration Act is what you're talking about. It was passed in 2013, and the justices actually that the justices ruled 7-1 that the Exoneration Act, which forced defendants to have to go back and prove they're innocent in a subsequent lawsuit before they could get money for they could get back money. Paid to the state from the state after a conviction was unconstitutional because they said that they shouldn't have to prove it again. Right? That's what you're complaining
correct,
about.
Correct, sir. And then with a judge reads that or an attorney should read what's in the statute. But currently, it is the old statute that shows those requirements, sir.
Right. And I think
it's misleading.
Wasn't it Nelson versus Colorado that came out and gave the person the right to get their money back? And
correct, that was 2017.
Right.
And so since 2013 and 2020, as that statute presents itself in the statute book right now and probably going into play again, has the requirements the federal government found to be unconstitutional.
Right. Well, what they found was the burden of proof that was being required was unconstitutional.
That was a burden of proof once in the trial, and then a burden of proof again to try to get your exoneration and your money.
Right.
So, in essence, two trials. It's almost just double jeopardy. Almost.
It's double jeopardy, exactly.
Yeah.
It's double jeopardy, exactly. And what the problem is it's misleading to any because the first paragraph under the Exoneration Act states that you have to do that and as it's in print right now. So if an attorney reads this and then sees all these requirements that the federal government is putting this individual through or what they think is the process of this, the most civil remedy as it's called, they're going to say they will be misled. It is a total reconstruction. And then, you know, people can look, attorneys and lawyers, DAs, judges can all look at the law, the governor, which requires, and the Attorney General's Office and the NBA, which it requires, when the federal government recording transcripts states all the person should have to do after they win their appeal with harmful errors.
Right. Yeah, I know. We've covered that. All right. Motion. J.D., I'm going to put you on hold. We're going to give you a call. I want to talk to you some more about this issue because the harmless error part is the fascinating part of the whole thing. So give Kevin your contact information. If you don't mind, we'll be glad to call you. And we appreciate your call to our show, okay?
I appreciate you, gentlemen, your service. And I sure wish Caitlin delivered in Colorado Springs.
All right. Okay.
That's great.
Thanks for the call, J.D.
Thank you, guys.
We appreciate it. All right, you're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Don't forget about the show that follows our show. You're going to want to listen to it. It's a consumer real estate show, Barry and Larry, right? And you might just ask them some questions on coronavirus. Colorado is a real estate disclosure state. We just have to disclose matters. And so do you have to disclose that? If somebody in the house had coronavirus, do you have to disclose that? If you had a condition, is that disclosable? What happens if you didn't disclose it?
We missed on Tim. Tim, we'll get you after the show. We'll call you this week.
Right, Tim, if you give your name and number, your contact information, we'll be glad to contact you. We're so sorry we couldn't get to you. And Jane, we're sorry we couldn't get to you. So, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. That's championsofthepeople.com. Information on our website. All of our books are there. Our shows are there. This show's there. Tips on what you need to know before you talk to the insurance adjuster. It's all right there. That's right there. That part's right there on the homepage. It's very easy. Bell and Pollock, championsofthepeople.com, because we are your champions of the people. See you next week.